Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Welcome to a brand new Hotspurs podcast. It is Friday, the 29th of May, 2020. I am Steve in Leonsea and Essex, and on today's show, I think this might be the final My Spurs journey, because I'm back to school on Monday, and this is probably the guest I've wanted to have on most out of anybody. It's Mr. Theo Delaney. How you doing, Theo?
Hi, thank you for those kind words. I'm all right. Thanks. I'm good. I'm excited to be on.
Well, I've listened to you, from back in the day. Obviously, Mike Lee started the Spurs show with Phil Cornwell all those years ago. Funnily enough, Phil lived around the corner from me here in Leonsea. And I would bump into him on several occasions, because not only would he always be out walking around and making a mischief of himself, but I'd see him at various sporting events, because his kid went to a local school, and I'm at another school, and I'm in charge of PE. So I've seen Phil around, and every time I saw him, and I must have seen Phil before he moved. I've seen him probably about 10, 15 times over the last few years. And every single time I see him, I say, hiya, Phil. And he looks at me like, how do you know me? Spurs, right, yes. So we get into the whole what's going on. And usually it's something like, rubbish, right? Something like that. So it hasn't been in the last few years, that's for sure. But Theo, you of course are a member of the Spurs show. How did that all come about?
Well, in 2007, my uncle Simon and I, he's my uncle, but he's only 5 years older than me, so he's more like a brother, and he's really the reason I became a Tottenham fan more than any other reason. We're both filmmakers. We make commercials and TV stuff and all that, and we went to Tottenham. We made them in 2006, we made them a film for their charity, Tottenham Foundation, and then in 2007, they asked us to make a load of films for the 125th anniversary. So we made a load of short films, interviewed all our heroes, and it was released on a DVD called Spurs at 125. And as a result of that, I got invited on the Spurs show. I think I got in touch, because I was a listener by then. And I think I got in touch with Mike Lee and said, mate, I can't believe you haven't had me on. I mean, my brother Sam was doing a West Ham one, which is part of the same stable. And I thought, surely they've got to have me on that Spurs show. I've just made all these films. Anyway, that's how I blagged my way in, and they never got rid of me.
That's brilliant. I blagged my way on my first podcast was the Tottenham Football Fancast, which started just after the Spurs show. And it was the two of them going back, we're going what, 10, 12 years ago. Spurs show was first, then it was the Tottenham Football Fancast. I blagged my way onto that, and then me and Flav and the boys from the Fighting Cock started at the same time. And Flav's been on this show several times, and we have a laugh, and I have to edit out all his swears, because obviously I'm a teacher and get me in trouble. We bump into each other up at Spurs, and we have a laugh and stuff. So this whole podcast community, and what I've always done this with my show is talk about all the other podcasts, and because we're all Spurs, and I've got no commercial gain in it at all. I don't do adverts or anything like that. I know Mike's a little bit more stringent on that. I've bumped into Mike many times. In fact, funnily enough, at Wembley last season, it was one of these cup games. I think it was maybe the year before, maybe the Wimbledon game. I can't remember. But I got a different ticket to my usual season ticket somewhere else in the ground, sat down, and Mike sat right next to me with his daughter. And I've sort of said, Mike from the Spurs show. And he's like, You do one, don't you? Because I'd met him before. So, and we proceeded to talk throughout the whole game. And,
yeah.
I think at half time he was like, "Oh, can't sit next to you for the second half," and he put his daughter in the seat. But no, we won't. So, you know, we won't. we won't go there. Brilliant. Look, it's great to have you on. We're going to get into the questions then, and the first question actually you've kind of already answered, which is who is your favourite football club and why?
Yeah, I mean, I've been Tottenham since I can remember, since the cradle. And it was a family thing. And as I say, I've got, my dad's the oldest of eight. He's got three sisters and four brothers. And the brothers, three out of the four brothers were Tottenham fans. And my dad was never a staunch fan of any particular club, but he's a Tottenham fan as well. He's almost become more of a Tottenham fan over the years. So I don't remember being anything else, but in particular, my Uncle Simon, who, as I mentioned, was more like a big brother, and I sort of idolized him, and he was like a role model. And he was massive Tottenham. And that's the reason. Yeah. First game I went to was, I was only 5 years old. One of my other uncles took me, Uncle Bonkers.
And funny, just from what you said previously about being on podcasts, I've just remembered when you said that you wanted to be on. I've been doing these series of shows, My Spurs Journey. We've had about 20 guests so far, fantastic people. And the only one that asked to be on was Anthony Costa from Blue.
Really?
A friend of his, Crackers had been on. And of course, they do their show
together. Crackers
is great,
yeah.
So Crackers had been on, and Crackers obviously had messaged him, and he DM'd me and said, "Oh, listen, we'll be on," and it was brilliant. So, and I'm a bit of a boy band fan from back in the day, so I was like, "Yeah, definitely."
Oh, right.
I was asking him loads of questions. But brilliant. So, next question is: what is your favourite country?
That's an interesting question. My favourite country.
These questions don't have to be Spurs related, but they can be if you want. It's entirely up to you. It's your interpretation of the question.
Okay, well, you know, I'm not a massively patriotic or nationalistic, but I absolutely love this country, the one we're sitting in right now. I think it's a great country. So probably put it at number one. But then I happen to love Italy. I have family in Italy. I've spent a lot of time in Italy. I love going to America. I've done a lot of work in America, and I have family in America.
Yeah.
I love Japan. Japan's amazing. I went there for the World Cup in 2002. Totally fell in love with it.
Yeah.
And I love Ireland because I'm part, quite a large chunk of me is Irish.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of Irish heritage.
Irish, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm bloody, I just don't know. If you put a gun to my head, I'd go for the United Kingdom.
Okay, no problem. And what about, let's bring it down a little bit here. What player do you dislike the most?
You know what, you forget some play. What was I watching yesterday? Something came up on YouTube. It was a Tottenham game, the one where... I think it was the one where Popescu scored the winner against Arsenal all those years ago, and Stefan Schwartz appeared. I'd forgotten about him altogether, Swedish Arsenal player. Such a dirty player. Mind you, I think it would obviously be an Arsenal player. I think it might be, who's the goalkeeper with the most punchable face in football? The one who Harry Kane did from the halfway line in pre-season.
Chesney. Do you know what I always say about him?
Yeah, Chesney.
He reminds me of, do you know when you watch... teen movies, and there's like the jock, and then and the girl, but it's the jock's mate who's the annoying one. That's Sir Chesney.
Yeah,
that annoying.
He's got the face for that, hasn't he?
Yeah, that kind of James Spade back in the day. Horrible, toffee-nosed. Rich parents, horrible bloke who
gets
his face punched at the end.
And the thing is about him is I totally agree. He's got that kind of face. That's why I call it, you're bang on there. And that's why I call him the most punchable face. But I don't think it would be fair to persecute a man for his face, because, of course, you can't help the face you're born with. Except that he's the most provocative bastard, isn't he? He's the one who was always going on social media, winding up Spurs fans, even after he left and everything. When Harry Kane lobbed him from the halfway line, that was poetic justice, I thought.
Joyful, joyful. What about the team that you dislike the most?
Well, Arsenal.
Yeah, I mean, you say that, and I agree with you. But a few people have said Chelsea. We've not had any West Ham's, obviously, with their irrelevant.
Okay.
But it is Arsenal, is it?
I'll tell you exactly how I feel and have always felt about who to hate. It's a really simple equation. I support three teams, right?
Yeah.
My favourite team is Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
My second favourite team is whoever's playing Arsenal.
Yeah.
Even if it's Chelsea.
Yes.
Right? My third favourite team is whoever's playing Chelsea, unless it's Arsenal.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's it. I live by that. I don't hate anyone else. I don't even hate West Ham. I've actually got two West Ham supporting brothers. Yeah. I don't hate West Ham. I think, who cares? I mean, they're a bit, they're sweet, really, aren't they?
Well, the fans are fine when you get them chatting because they know knowledgeable about football. Chelsea haven't got a clue about anything before 20 years ago or 15 years ago, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Arsenal, whenever I get into a chat with an Arsenal fan, I'll say something, just randomly. I'll say, did you see Man United, Sheffield United last night? No. What? Well, I only watch Arsenal. How many times have you had that conversation? But Spurs, I think Spurs fans and West Ham fans get on very well because we watch all football. We love it all. That's my experience anyway.
Yeah.
What about...
That's true. But West Ham do hate Tottenham, though.
They do.
They are the team that most... One of the things I'm most proud about Tottenham is if you ask Chelsea fans, Arsenal fans and West Ham fans who they hate the most, they all say Tottenham.
They do.
And that, to me, makes us the biggest club in London. That's the final proof you need.
I think it goes beyond that as well. I think you've got Southampton for some reason. Because Southampton... obviously it's Portsmouth. But when Portsmouth weren't in the same division, it was because I went to Southampton Uni and met a load of Southampton fans. I hate Tottenham, so I think it goes beyond that. What about your favourite ever player?
Well, I never hesitate to say Glenn Hoddle. Yeah. I mean, I'm of a certain age where Glenn Hoddle came along when I was at that formative. I was probably about. I would have been about 11, 10, 11 when he emerged. And I just couldn't believe he was a proper idol. You know, he had just had everything and just easily the best player around of his generation. Thrilling to watch, but also not just thrilling, not like because you get those, prolific centre forwards who are pretty thrilling, but he just had a class about him, a sort of way about him. He was an artist, he's an absolute artist. And I felt what it's like when you're a kid, you sometimes think of yourself as a misunderstood outsider. That's a very sort of adolescent kid thing so you could identify with Hoddle because he was different from all the others. He was underrated by England managers, especially. And some people called him a luxury player. Some people said he didn't work enough. And you just identified with that. So he was the best, but he was more than that. He was an artist.
Yeah. And I know he was on a live Spurs show a few years ago. And I remember listening to it and thinking at the start, I might be wrong on this. At the start, I think he kind of didn't want to be there. It's one of the first ones he ever did. And at the end, Mike, or who might have been Phil, asked him, or it might have been himself, I can't remember, asked him, has it been all right? Is this good? And he literally, you could hear in his voice, said, this has been brilliant. And obviously, subsequently, Glenn has done lots of evenings with, if you like. And I think you guys... particularly at the Spurs show, have really done brilliantly with getting the ex Spurs players to do all these things, all these great evenings, because prior to podcasts and you guys being at the forefront of that, I don't know if they were that being with the integrating with the fans as much, but those nights are brilliant, aren't they? And obviously these chats are.
Oh yeah,
Mickey Hazard. Mickey Hazard is just wonderful. You just have to just tweet him and say, "Fans coming on the show tomorrow," and he's like, "Yeah, no problem. Give us a ring." Fantastic. And obviously, have you been at one of the live shows with Glenn?
Yeah, now you've gone again.
And in terms of the Spurs shows with Glenn, have you been to those ones?
Yeah, I did. I think I did both of the Glenn Hoddle ones. There was one we did with Glenn and Gary Mabbott, and then we did one with just Glenn on his own year before last, I think, at Christmas. But I already knew him because I'd worked on a TV project with him. My uncle, who I mentioned earlier, Simon, had been put in touch with him by a mutual friend. And when Glenn started his Spanish Football Academy, he wanted to do a TV aspect to it, you know, do a TV show to run alongside it. And we developed a TV program with him, which was great. I mean, he was great to work with. He's a lovely bloke. And so, yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. He was my idol. He didn't know that. You can't say that to someone when you're working with them, obviously. Yeah. But and he was also my uncle's idol. So every time we'd be in these very serious meetings talking about it all in detail, and he'd go off somewhere, and as soon as he left the room, two of us would be going, "Oh my God, it's Glenn Hoddle." And then he'd come back in and we'd be all professional again, you know.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant. What about a favourite manager?
Well, that's a tricky one because it would be, I mean, there are three contestants, contenders, if you like, for that. One would be Pochettino, one would be Birkinshaw, and one would be Nicholson. Nicholson, of course, had gone by the time I was about eight. He left when I was about eight.
Yeah.
So I have a massive sort of affection for Nicholson. I remember when he died, I wrote a thing on the message board that I was on at the time. I wrote an article about him, and I felt very emotional about it. And yet, as I say, I was a very young fan when he was in charge, and I missed probably his best years, obviously, which would have been the 60s. Birkinshaw, because that team with Hoddle in, that great early 80s team, was such an emotional, wonderful experience for me as a fan, because it felt like we'd waited a long time. I mean, in the context of the modern day, we hadn't waited very long at all, but it felt like we'd waited a long time for glory. And then all this glory came in a gush, you know, with two FA Cups and a UEFA Cup and all that. And it was such a great team to watch, such great players. So Birkinshaw for that. And then Pochettino, because Pochettino just, you know, famously stopped Spurs being Spurs. He turned us into the most, that wonderful dream ticket of a team where you get a team that is great to watch, plays great entertaining football, but also has grit and character and esprit de corps and all the things you need to win. We didn't win a trophy, of course, under him, but we did everything but.
Yeah.
So it would be between those three, and it'd be very, very difficult to choose. If I was forced to choose, I might say Pochettino.
I'm not forcing you on any of these. It's perfectly fine okay. To have a general. What about a favourite ever goalkeeper?
Jennings.
Yeah.
No question. Again, but by the time he left, I was very, very young, you know, but I idolised him like no other keeper. So he was an idol. He was an icon, remains an icon. But also, he was just supremely good. He was so, so good. So I wouldn't hesitate.
We all know the story of when he went to Arsenal. How old were you when he went to Arsenal?
I would have been, I'm just trying to think. I would have been about 10.
Yeah.
When was it? Was it 75, 76, something like that, wasn't it?
I don't know, but I know, you know, and we all know the story and everything.
Yeah,
and
he didn't want to go. They forced him out.
Yeah.
He didn't like Arsenal. He was a Tottenham man.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And when you listen to the previous shows, Theo, which you're going to do all weekend now, because I've told you to listen to Judy Welch and all the rest. I do tell the story that I met Pat Jennings probably about 20 years ago, and been fortunate enough to meet him several times since, because he's a mate of my dad's through golf. And so we've sat at dinner many times and in bars and restaurants, and he's told that story, you know, was with his wife next to him, who's clarifying every single word that he's saying. And it's just if anybody can get their head around the difference between the football player, the football manager, and you know, as John Sitton once said, the clowns upstairs. You know, that difference in their mentality. You've got the greatest goalkeeper of all time in the world, not just at Spurs.
Yeah.
And they've decided to let him go. It boggles
the mind. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Boggles
yeah,
the mind.
Unbelievable. I don't know if you're watching that Michael Jordan thing, are you, on Netflix?
I can't watch it because anybody that's ever talked about it, like Jamie Carragher was on the other day, said, I'm not into basketball, but I decided to watch it. And it's all about being a winner and having that yeah. passion. And I'm like, well, as a Spurs fan, I'm going to watch it and go, oh, no. It will just depress
well,
me.
Yeah. The only reason I mention it, it is brilliant. If you're a sports fan at all, it is absolutely fantastic.
As a Spurs fan, does it help?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. But sort of, I hadn't looked at it in that way. But the reason why I mention it is that a big part of the plot is exactly what you're just talking about, which is that the players are on one level and they're brilliant players. And he, in his case, the best player there's ever been.
Yeah.
And you've still got management on the above them, still stitching them up, disrespecting them, rejecting them, getting rid of them.
Wow.
It's incredible. It's like, and you think this is the best team there's ever been, the best players have ever been, and they're still being treated with contempt by people upstairs in just the same way as Jennings.
Yeah.
It's amazing, really.
It's amazing. What about a favourite defender?
Ledley.
Yeah.
I'm not pausing very much, am I? I like this. I didn't know any of these questions in advance, but Ledley King was just, again, he just filled you with joy watching him. You were just so proud to have him. You were just so in awe of his all-round incredible ability. He had everything, you know, his ability to read the game, to do the right thing, to be a leader, the speed and skill with which he was able to play and tackle. And I mean, it's a position, if I had ever been any good at football, which I never was at all, but if I had been good at football, I reckon I might have been a central defender, because it's a position I love and I admire watching the really good central defenders. You know, the ones, there's that French, you know, thing, savoir faire, that thing of knowing what to do and where to be, where positioning and vision and decision making. It's almost like an intellectual position when it's at its best. And, you know, the legend of Paul McGrath, who was at Villa all those years, he was the best defender in the league, and he never trained. And Ledley was like that, of course, in the concluding years of his career. He didn't need to train because he had it. He was so clever. You know, he was just a complete footballer. I loved him.
Do you know what's popped into my mind as you talk about that? Is the fact that you can be absolutely fantastic, like your Paul McGrath, your Ledley Kings, your Gary Mabbotts, people like that.
Yeah.
And then you've got the worst central defenders who are a complete opposite and a complete calamity.
Yeah.
And
I think I know who you're talking about.
He works on
Sports. We've had a few.
Yeah.
No, we've had a few.
What about your favourite ever midfielder?
Well, it's Glenn. But since we've already said Glenn, a close, very, very close second is Paul Gascoigne.
Yeah.
Who was, again, to watch. He was, I mean, I was fortunate. I'd got my season ticket by the time Gazza came along, and to watch him, those 2 years, either side of Italian 90, when he was in a Spurs shirt, were his best years. And that is really saying something when you think about it, because he was, I mean, people talk about world-class players. He was, at times, he was the best player in the world, I think. And those were his best 2 years. And you'd watch him. He was that rare sort of player that would actually, I used to watch him sometimes, and he'd be passing the ball, the team, and he'd be asking for the ball and they wouldn't give it. I'm sure there was one of those cup games in that cup run. I think it might have been Notts County.
Yeah.
Where you saw him, he just got really annoyed that they hadn't passed the ball to
yes,
him
yes.
recently. And he went and got it, took it off one of his own players. And
I think that is Oxford.
But, right,
but it
yeah.
could be any game. The reason I say it's Oxford is because the commentator says, and Gazza's just taken the ball off his own player because. But it could be any game that Gazza used to do that.
Yeah, I mean, he was in that league of player where he could just decide to affect the game himself on his own, and then just would go off and do it and enjoy it. You know, he did it as much as anything because he loved doing it. He loved playing football. And he was an absolute born genius. And again, he's one of you watched him, you thought, bloody hell, he's so unbelievably good. And he's ours. I can't believe it. It's incredible.
And just what a shame. And I think, you know, if you sat him down heart to heart, he'd say that the challenge on Gary Charles, he was never the same again. And it's so sad. I mean, obviously, he had a great career at Rangers. You know, we all saw the goal he scored against Scotland a few years later.
Yeah, and he still loved at Lazio. I said, I've got family in Italy, and a lot of them are Lazio fans, and he's still an absolute legend there. So that's why I say, I mean, I saw him those two best seasons with a season ticket. And that's why I say that's saying something, because even afterwards, as you rightly say, he's still a legend at Rangers and Lazio.
Yeah.
And England, like you say, in 96, 5 years after that terrible injury, scored one of the greatest goals in England's history.
Yeah, absolutely. What about your favourite ever striker?
Well, I've got a massive... I mean, Harry Kane's obviously in the mix.
Yeah.
Because he's provided us with so much joy and he is so prolific. And depending on whether he sticks around, he may stick around for his whole career, who knows? This is obviously a subject of constant debate.
Well, we've had that debate for the last... That's been on Sky News and in all the papers for the last 4 years, ever since his first season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a constant... Kane's going to go. And all I'll say to that is, where's he going to go? There's only one... I have to speak to my Liverpool mates. They don't like him. They hate him. So he's not going to go there. Yeah. He can only ever go, really, to Man City or Madrid or Barcelona. And do they want him? I mean, I know that they want him, but will they want him for 200 million? And at the end of the day... Even if he says, you know what, I do fancy going, is that move actually going to happen with his injuries and everything? I'm not sure.
No, I mean, that's why it's so up in the air. That's why it's a perennial debate, because there's so many ifs and buts. The only thing I would say is if he really wanted to go, he could make it happen, because players that special, if they really, really want to go, they can usually get a big move. And there are, you know, Man United, I'd probably put in that mix. And maybe, maybe Juventus. Yeah. Big clubs. Because, like, you're right, and not all of them are going to want him. But if one of those big five or six clubs in the world want him and he really wants a move, then he could make it happen. But hopefully, you know, it doesn't fall into place.
What about... a match that has made you cry?
Well, I'm really into the idea of not crying when things go badly at football. I think that's something you should try to avoid. Because I don't think it's dignified for a grown man to cry at some...
Are you saying that you never have? Or is there a but?
No.
There?
I'm saying I've never cried about losing, ever. And I won't. When we lose, I'm usually just pissed off and angry.
Yeah.
I'm not emotional about losing, but I can be emotional about winning. And I remember I don't know about you, but the older I get, the more emotional I become. I can cry at movies now and all sorts of things. I cried at a record that came on in the car the other day, which is ridiculous.
Sure, what was the record?
It's a record by, Loretta Lynn called The Van Leer Rose. It's the title track of an album that she made with Jack White years and years ago. And I used to play it when my kids were little and they loved it. Okay. And I hadn't heard it for years. My daughter put it on a playlist. We were on quite a long trip.
Yeah.
And it came on and there's just a bit at the end which is very poignant. It's a great song because it's a story song and there's a reveal bit at the end. I found myself welling up. I couldn't believe it. I'm driving along the M40.
So you're driving along, you're crying, your eyesight's going a bit. Did you go to Barnard Castle to make sure that you was all right?
as far as crying at football is concerned, I did shed a tear and I was a much younger man at the time and I wasn't a regular crier by any means, and I found myself just shedding a little tear when we won the cup in 91 and the lap of honour was happening. And I think the reason for it was it had been such a tumultuous kind of cup run that where, you know, Gazza had got us there, then Gazza had gone off early in the game. We'd beaten Arsenal in the semi-final. You know, then the game itself was such a rollercoaster ride. Lineker had missed the penalty and Gazza had gone off. And we'd won it after all of that. But also central to the whole plot line was the fact that the club was in danger of going out of business.
Yes.
We were going bust. And the perception was, and I think quite rightly, was that a deal could be done much better and perhaps only could be done if we won the cup and thereby went into European competition, which guaranteed other, you know, lots of things in terms of revenue and profile. And that might be the thing that that sealed a deal with someone who came in to rescue us. And that's what it proved to be. And I think at that moment, as they went round, I thought, this is existential. We've not just won the cup, we've saved this club.
Yeah.
You know, the club I've loved all my life. And a tear rolled down my cheek then.
Yeah, there were newspaper reports about the fact that we could go into administration, I remember. And it was the cup run that kept us going. I remember it really, really well. And that whole season was the season, because 90 had been Gazza in the World Cup. And of course, for about 6 weeks or maybe the whole year, was Gazza stories, back page, front page, whatever it was, you know, and he had to fart, and it was, you know, front page news. And of course,
he was the most famous man in the country, yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable. What about the first match you ever remember seeing?
Well, the first match I ever went to was in, as I mentioned earlier, in 1971. I went to Tottenham Crystal Palace. I was 5 years of age, and we won 3-0. And obviously, I don't remember much detail about the game itself, but I do remember the experience very well and being so thrilled. My uncle took me, Uncle Bonkers. Mm-hmm. He was a very kindly uncle. He still is, actually. And he knew I was really into it, even though I was only five. And he took me, he bought me a rosette with a big sort of satin rosette with a picture of Martin Chivers in the middle of it. And I remember the whole experience quite vividly, considering how young I was. We won 3-0. I'm pretty sure the scorers were Chivers, Peters and Gilzina, who were pretty much my three favourite players.
Yeah.
And that team was the first team that I loved. It was those three were the big stars, but also had Alan Mullery in it. Steve Perriman was coming through. Yeah. Phil Beale. I had a Phil Beale shirt, in as much as my mum had sewn the number 9 on upside down on my Tottenham shirt for my birthday. So I thought I was getting a Chivers shirt and ended up getting a Phil Beale shirt. So... Pat Jennings, of course, Kinnear and Knowles and Jimmy Neighbour, people like that. It was a great team. I loved
Mike England being that one?
Yeah, Mike England, yeah. Good shout. Yeah, he was great, England.
Brilliant. Where is that rosette now, dare I ask?
Well, I wish I knew.
Yeah.
In landfill somewhere, probably.
What about a funny moment? So maybe a funny match you saw or a funny moment in a match.
Okay, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but here's what I think about football and humour. I think one of the reasons we love football is that it is hilariously funny. And one of the reasons it's hilariously funny is because all of us, on and off the pitch, when we're at football, on and off the pitch, act like little children. It's like we're allowed, just for that 2 hours every week, to act like toddlers. So whereas we're all into doing the right thing and being responsible and sensible the rest of the week, we will cheat and lie and, you know, we'll see something that is clearly not fair and we'll shout and scream that it's fair and vice versa. We'll appeal for things that are not right. We'll sing stupid rhyming songs like little children in the, you know, some of them very, very nasty, the sort of nastiness that you'd never do elsewhere.
Yeah.
And I think watching players behave petulantly and cheating and lying on the pitch in front of all these people is hilarious. But I once went, I don't know if I'm going to be allowed this, you might want to edit this out, but I've been going to Tottenham with the same
mate of mine. That's all you...
Okay, there won't be any swearing. But the same mate of mine, Kevin Thomas, who also is another guy who does what I do, makes TV commercials, brilliant bloke. We've been sitting together in the ground since 1992. And he and I, just to be clear, I haven't had any illegal substances for 25 years.
Okay.
But in the early days, we used to like a smoke.
Okay.
We didn't do it very often. But I remember going to this game. We were playing Oxford and they had a goalkeeper called Gerard.
Yeah.
And we'd had a little smoke before we went. And we sat down for this game. The game starts and this guy, Gerard, had an absolute mare. And as I remember it, he made two massive howling errors within the first 10, 20 minutes, both of which resulted in Tottenham goals. And because we were so stoned, we were absolutely, you talk about crying again, we were crying, laughing, absolutely uncontrollable in the stand. And of course, these same guys sat around us week in, week out for several years, in my case, a couple of years in his case. And they were like, what the hell is the matter with these two guys?
So what year are we talking?
I reckon this is about 94, 5, mid-90s.
In the mid-90s, something like, okay.
When Oxford were in the top flight.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper was called Gerrard. I think it was Oxford. God, it's all
Oxford, because I think they fell out the league at around that
okay,
time.
Okay, no. Who? Maybe it was Oldham. It was one of those teams okay. that are no longer... It might have been Oldham. Gerrard, his name was the goalkeeper.
I
remember
it was Oldham, because didn't we beat them 5-0?
Maybe. It might have been that game.
And it was a sunny day.
Yes. Blimey, your memory's good.
I know, it's ridiculous. It was a sunny day.
Yeah, sunny. It was definitely a very sunny day.
Played.
Yeah.
I think it was the season, and it was one of those... I think it was in the period when we were sort of winning quite handsomely at home and getting stuffed away or something. So you're sitting there in the mid-nine... Right, so nine...
there we are.
Behind the goal, same... or where are you?
No, we were in the Upper West. We sat in the same seats for years and years and years in the Upper West. That's why it was...
What block?
Block 7.
Block 7. So you're the other side. So I was block 2. Pete Kane told me he was block 4.
Yeah, he's in the middle, yeah.
So you're up...
Mike Lee's up your end.
Yeah.
Or was, you know.
Yeah. So I see Mike... I saw Mark Lowes. He sat behind me throwing popcorn on my head. So you're up the other end. So midnight, I'm trying to envisage. So shell suit top, maybe. I don't know. Maybe a mop of hair coming down. I don't know. Trying to picture you in the stands there.
Yeah, I think my hairline was already receding even at that early age. I think, but. Oh my God, we've never laughed so much. And it's ridiculous, really, because you had to be stoned to find it that funny. It was quite funny, you know. But when you've had a bit of a laugh and a joke, we were incapable. I mean, we spent the whole first half desperately trying to collect ourselves. I think we managed to by half time.
And what about the worst match you ever saw?
I never leave before the end. I mean, that's almost unheard of. I mean, once or twice I've done it because I've had to get somewhere for work. But the only time I've stormed out in absolute disgust, I think, was the Chelsea 1-6 game under Christian Gross. I think it was under Christian Gross. It was
his first home game. We'd beaten Everton away with two great Ginola goals. And we thought, this might be all right. And then we played
Chelsea.
This
is going to work.
And it wasn't even Chelsea. It was Chelsea B team.
Oh, God.
Hullet put out, remember they had they had four strikers like we used to have. And Flo was always the secondary striker. Well, he scored a hat trick. And it was Trevor. I remember Edinburgh, poor old Justin Edinburgh. Coming on with about 20 minutes to go, and the fans are going, what's going on? Yeah, but you left, or you?
Well,
I was
so upset. I stormed out. I think on about the fifth goal, I was so angry, and I was sitting at that stage. Kevin and I were sitting there, and we had for a while another guy sat with us called Matthew. And they tried to stop me because they thought, you never leave. They was like, where are you going? Stop. And I was, I nearly swore. I'm out. I'm going. I was so cross. I couldn't contain my anger because obviously, as we discussed, Chelsea, you know, to lose to Chelsea at home is undignified enough. God knows it's happened enough over the years. But to lose 6-1 at home to Chelsea was unbearable.
I must say, I never leave, but I did leave the semi-final. I think at 3-1 or 4-1 to Chelsea, the game that no one remembers. What was it about with Scott Parker in midfield?
I was away. I was abroad for that, so I was spared that.
What about? Have you ever been at a match and it scared you? Scared? Maybe been to away at West Ham or gone abroad somewhere.
I've been away at Man City and Leeds both times where it's felt like a Beirut, you know, war scene where you've just had to hope you're not going to get picked off. I was once at Coventry. I went to Coventry for, God, this was an eventful night. Do you remember that game at Coventry in the League Cup where we're 2-0 up at half time, we ended up losing 3-2? And it was a midweek game. First thing that happened, when we got there, some policeman slammed me up against the wall and said, you've got a nerve coming here, haven't you? And I said, I'm sorry, I beg your pardon. He said, I can't believe it. You've just walked straight up here as if, I said, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, oh, yeah. And it was a case of mistaken identity. He kept me pinned up against this wall for about 15 minutes before this other copper came round, who was his boss, who said, that's not him. And then he let me go. So that's what happened before the game. Then we went 2-0 up. Then we lost 3-2. And then after the game, we were walking back to the car, three of us, and suddenly we heard behind us, we heard the words shouted towards us, come on, Cockneys, do you want some? Right. And we looked around, and there's like about eight young, you know, thugs.
Yeah.
And they start running towards us. We think, shit! And so we start running, desperately running towards the car, get to the car, and they're right behind us. Said, we'll never get in the car in time. And they just ran straight past us. They were after a completely different target altogether.
God.
Really embarrassing.
So wait, so though, you're standing at the car, thinking...
No, well, by the time we get to the car, we're desperately trying to open the door, thinking they're going to get here before I can get the door open and get in.
Yeah.
And they just ran straight past us. And I looked where they were running, and there was another group of people they were running after. It wasn't us they were after. I can't remember when this would have been. It's probably late 90s or something.
Who was playing? I mean, I can't remember being 2-0 down and losing 3-2 to Coventry. I mean, it definitely happened because that
it was a League Cup. And I think Dion Dublin might have scored a hat-trick.
Oh.
I've got a feeling Dion Dublin had come back from injury or something. He was by far their best player.
Yeah.
And it was like he just changed. I don't know if he came on or if it was his first game back or something, but he was majestic in the second half. But it was we thought we were just cruising, you know.
Presumably, Cundy was Cundy and someone else.
Maybe
was
might have been Cundy.
Nethercott, maybe.
Yeah, what a pairing that would be. Yeah.
Well, just a couple more to go then, Theo. About a player that you used to love but you don't anymore? So we've had people like Danny Rose. We've had obviously, you know, he who shall not be named. We've had people like Berbatov, Modric. You know, players that have broken your heart, or players that someone who maybe a Dyer who he's the future, and all of a sudden Henderson goes one way, Dyer goes the other, and we're looking at it now, going, hang on a minute. Is he ever going to come back? Who springs to mind as someone you used to really love and now you're like, oh no?
Well, I think happened? You know, I don't think there's anyone even in the same league as he who shall not be named, because what we all forget, and we like to forget in a way because it's easier, makes it easier, is how much we loved him. I mean, he really was. We loved him. He was our captain. He'd come through the ranks. He was England's best young defender. He was great. Everything about him, he was an icon of the club. So when he left, that's why I consider it to be the greatest act of treachery in the history of football, you know. And it wasn't helped by the fact that he didn't seem to understand it.
Yeah.
He was never quite understood why he was getting so much stick. And you think, really? Are you serious? You don't understand?
Yeah.
And also the way he did it, because I remember, probably lots of people do, I remember exactly where I was. It came as such a shock. I was driving with the guy I worked with, the producer that I was working with. We were driving across town from a meeting, and the sports bulletin came on Radio 5 Live and said, well, we've got some extraordinary news to give you now. We've just been at the press conference at Arsenal. Arsene Wenger's walked in with a big grin on his face, and he said, I'd like to introduce you to someone. And in walked Sol Campbell. And I'm listening to this on the radio. No warning. We'd had no warning at all. And I felt a bit like when I stormed out at that Chelsea game. My producer, not a football fan at all. He was like, what's the matter? Mm. I was absolutely a combination of irate and also utterly gutted, you know, at the same time. I mean, terrible. Because what you hate as a football fan, as you know, you can take a lot, but humiliation is something you find difficult to take. And when it's humiliation that could be avoided, you know, you look at that Chelsea game, that was the worst thing about it. You're being humiliated, all of you in that ground, you're being humiliated. And that Sol Campbell thing, the reason why, I've said his name now. I think he genuinely didn't grasp the scale of the damage, what he was inflicting on Tottenham fans to do that. It's one thing doing it. It's one thing leaving after you're saying you're not going to leave. It's another thing leaving for your club's greatest rivals. That is unbelievable. But to do it like that, to go in with the grinning manager. I mean, I'm getting angry now. You can probably tell.
No, you're right. And for no money. And the fact that he could have gone anywhere. United and Arsenal were on level pegging at the time. He could have gone to United, no problem. He could have gone to Barcelona. All the teams that we've mentioned before. He could have gone. He could pick a club, and he chose to go there. That's why we're so cross about it because. And subsequently he did fantastically well for himself and Arsenal went from strength to strength. But, if he hadn't have gone there, if he'd have said, well, obviously I'm going to go Man United and play alongside Rio Ferdinand or whatever, they would have dominated for the next few years. But unfortunately, we had to sit there and watch him blooming well win all sorts. Well, we were avid Gregor Raziak or whatever it is we're trying to support. Let's bring it back round. What about a player that you have always? By the way, so you make the videos. Did you? I think I'm right in saying. Did you make the final video with Kenneth Branagh?
Yeah.
That is brilliant. I don't want to. You know, like get all sugary. But I think I'm quite right to say that was absolutely brilliant.
Well, thank you very much. It was an incredible honour to do it. I was actually the creative director of the whole finale show, actually, and
yes,
part of
were.
It.
Yeah.
But also, by trade, I'm a filmmaker, so I also made the films for it. And that film was an enormous honour. I mean, like a dream come true to be given that as a task. And greatly enjoyable to do. And getting Kenneth Branagh to do it was a major coup, obviously, and he was great. And
straight away?
No. When I got, they hired me, they knew they had to do a show. They weren't really sure what they wanted to do. And they phoned me up. And as I said, I'd worked with them before at Tottenham. I'd done things for them. And they phoned up and said, would you be interested in getting on board as a kind of creative overseer of the whole finale show? And you can imagine, I was thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind, you know. So I went in and...
Did they say, watch this West Ham one?
They did actually. I made it my business to watch that. I hadn't watched it at the time, but I watched that and I watched the Arsenal one. I thought they were both pretty shoddy, and part of the brief and part of my serious, my number one priority was to make it very, you know, premium, make it look like something we could be proud of if it went out all over the world, which it ended up. They ended up broadcasting it live all over the world, Sky. And it had to be really slick and really professional and really modern and all of those things. So, yeah, and we looked at the when you looked at the West Ham and the Arsenal ones, they weren't that. So I think we've moved it on. And the film, yeah. Branagh, to answer your first question, Branagh wasn't he had agreed apparently to in principle to do a voiceover for us, but I really thought it was important to get him in the film for all the reasons I've just said. I thought if we get a Knight of the Realm, one of the great Shakespearean actors and directors, to be the first person that you see in this whole show, and he's a Tottenham fan, and the first words he says are "my fellow Tottenham fans," then you've set the tone right from the start. So I was really keen to get him to be in it, but he hadn't said he would be in it, and he was off recovering from making Murder on the Orient Express. I couldn't even get any communication with him. His PA was helping us, but I couldn't get any communication with him for a few weeks at the beginning of the project. And to me, a lot of it hinged on getting him, because there were obviously second and third choices and stuff, but no one had the gravitas that he was able to offer. So when he finally said yes, he'd do it, I was absolutely cock-a-hoop, and I think that set the tone, as I say.
And just on that, had he turned it down, or was it the fact that you just couldn't get to him?
No, he hadn't turned it down. All he'd said was, I will do a voiceover. Because they'd asked him, before I'd got on board, they said to him, would you come and be the host of our finale show? And he said, no, it's not really what I do. I don't think I'd be right for that. But if you like, I can do a voiceover or something for a film. Yeah. And then he'd gone away. So by the time I got on board, they told me this. And I said, well, maybe he'll agree to be in a film. But and they said, well, you can ask him. So I asked him, and then I had to wait a long time for the answer. But it came... affirmative.
Oh, it's fantastic. How on earth did you get that rainbow? I mean, that is just brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, God. I mean, honestly, when the show came, I mean, it's enormous. I'm obviously very proud to have worked on that, and I had lots of people in the from within and outside the club working on it with me, and there's an enormous pressure. I've made loads of commercials for big brands and stuff all over the world, but I've never felt pressure like that, because it was much more important than anything I'd ever done before, because it was my club, and all the people I knew, you know, who cared so much about it on this emotional occasion were going to be watching this thing. And the one thing, we're all under enormous pressure. And the one thing we dreaded, or two things, we dreaded two things, but we figured there wasn't much we were going to be able to do about it. But we dreaded a big pitch invasion, and we dreaded heavy rain. Yeah. And they both happened. Yeah. They both happened really like off the scale. And yet, in a strange sort of a way, those two things contributed to the whole occasion, because the pitch invasion, you actually realised after a while that had to happen. The fans had to be allowed to do that for 10 minutes. Paul Coit was obviously heroic in getting everyone back off the pitch.
I was going to say heroes were created through that.
Yeah.
Paul Coit and the rainbow.
And then, of course, the rainbow wouldn't have happened without the rain. Yeah, exactly. And the rain almost, I don't know, it just added to the atmosphere,
you know,
in a way.
That,
and it didn't.
Do you know who said that? Dolly Parton. I'm not going to do the rest of that quote.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, it was an amazing experience and a great day. And
Do you know the guy who has got this shirt? You might have seen it on social media. His name's Jason Evans. He's got a shirt of 200 signatures but he's always posting this picture of him kissing the centre circle and then like standing up, and his lips are covered in grass and white. And again, it's I was up in the West Upper, as I say, and I couldn't get down to it. And you know, at the time I'm looking down going, guys, get off the blimmin' pitch. But the way Paul Coit just spoke to everybody, says, guys, can you all get off the pitch so we can do the thing? And everyone was like, you're all right then. Brilliant.
Coity is such a great bloke. I mean, yeah. I don't know if you could get it. You should try and get him because
I've chatted Coity loads, and
he's such a lovely guy.
He's brilliant, and every time I see him, because I'm fortunate enough to have some really nice seats at the new stadium, and he brings around the ex players, and I always have a chat.
Yeah.
With him. He's so lovely. And he has been on the show, actually, a few years ago. And I tried to get him on this, but obviously he does morning radio.
Yeah, gets up very, very early.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not going to hold that against him, but I will get him on eventually. But he's brilliant, isn't he? I mean, and he always says he pinches himself with the job he does. And for yourself, you're talking about that this thing that you did. And what a wonderful, wonderful legacy for yourself, Theo. Fantastic.
Beyond, I can't really, beyond words, really.
Yeah. Did you try and get Adele?
Well, she was certainly talked about, put it that way, but I think she was, she might have been even beyond
Phil
the
Collins,
top of the
mark.
No, we would, you know what? Funnily enough, one of the things that I was really keen on music wise was because there was, all sorts of names were mentioned, but I just, looking at that West Ham and the Arsenal had Roger Daltrey, who was up on the stage belting out some song he'd written about Arsenal, and you just think, that doesn't work. No. This isn't actually a rock concert. There'll be kids here who don't even know who he is. And he's out there giving, he just doesn't, it's not right, you know. And the West Ham had a band who I used to love when I was about 13 called the Cockney Rejects, but I mean, they're not exactly, you know, premium now, to be fair. So I felt like you didn't want a recognisable pop star, unless it was someone really massive who transcended everything. We get bloody Diana Ross or something. And Adele almost actually was in that category, but we wouldn't have got her. But apart from that, I said, no, we've got to get generic stuff that is just classy. That's why we went for a choir and an opera singer and a band.
And the opera singer, of course, is the guy from the adverts, but...
Yeah.
I flicked on the other day. I'm in this lockdown. I've and they're showing them all on Sky Arts or some program. All the operas, and so the Cats. What are they? Musicals.
Oh right, yeah.
Kind of opera and musicals. Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff. So Les Mis, and of course he's in Phantom.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he's one of the main characters. So I was like, hang on a minute, that's the old, that's the Welsh guy.
Yeah.
Brilliant. But listen,
it's a genuine Tottenham fan.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And I just thought it was done so brilliantly. One of my highlights, and I always say this, is Steve Archibald walking out, chewing gum, you know, just like, all right, this is great.
He's a great bloke as well.
My hero is Chris Waddle. And, of course, he was lost out. And Chris Waddle, the great thing about Chris Waddle is his walk. He walked like he played, he stepped out on the field like he was knackered from day one.
Yeah.
So he lollops out. Cliff Jones comes out and runs.
He's in his 80s.
And Chrissy Waddle comes out, lollops across. Yeah. All right.
Ginola comes out filming himself, of course. Perfect. Yeah.
Wonderful. It was just absolutely fantastic. So there you go. Right, let's get back to the last couple of questions. What about, have we done the player that you've had to defend all these years? So someone says to you, oh, this player, you go, yeah, I quite like him. And they're like, he's rubbish. And you're like, no,
that's a really good one. That's a good one. I like that.
So I'll tell you who we've had so far. We've had Ginger Pele. We've had Jose Dominguez. We've had people like even Moussa Dembélé, who I love, but people don't
did
like
get,
so
he
much.
Did get some stick, especially at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So who would you? Who comes to mind for that one? You can have Sergio Aurier if you want.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think. I tell you what, I used to stick up for. It became quite popular in the end, but he got a lot of stick early on. But actually, both the fullbacks, Danny Rose and Carl Walker, they both got a lot of stick early on when they were first getting in the team. They really did, and I really thought these guys are really. I think they're going to be the real thing. But I suppose that might sound like the benefit of hindsight, but I definitely think they got a lot of stick, and I definitely. Felt like I
Danny,
stuck up
Danny
for them
Rose
a lot.
Was awful at the start.
Yeah, I mean, he got loads of stick. I mean, I felt like the reason why I thought he was good raw material, and when he went to Sunderland and became a left back, I noticed that he was their player of the year that year and on loan, and I thought he might take a bit of time here, but you don't go up to Sunderland, you know, as on your own and actually win over fans like that to become their player of the year in 1 year.
Yeah.
In a new position, by the way. He'd hardly played much left-back football before that. So I thought, no, I reckon he's going to be all right. And, of course, they were both more than all right. I mean, when we were at our best under Pochettino, as many people have said, it was based as much as anything on having the two best, paciest, most combative and lethal breaking wing-backs in the league, you know.
Yeah. So you're going with... Which one are you going?
I'm going with them. Can I have them both?
Did you? You have defended them because Danny Rose must be the only player in history to score the greatest goal and then be absolutely awful for the next 2 years.
but then reemerge as a really top. I mean, at his best, probably the best, certainly the best left back in the country, and possibly in Europe. You know,
reemerge as the greatest left back, and then decide to quit it all because he misses his fish and chip shop in Doncaster.
Yeah, great. Love that.
Right, final question for you, Theo. You are walking down the road and aliens come down and an alien comes up to you and says, the famous director, producer, movie guy, the Spurs fan. But what is that? We don't know what that means. What is football? We don't know what football is. Well, we've just come down to earth and football is this thing we've heard about. And you say, aha, watch this. And you get a DVD and you hand it to them and you say, watch this. This is what football is. What football match are you handing the alien?
Wow. Okay. No, give me a second here. What football match? You know what? It would probably be. Because what you want is a match. Because obviously all the matches we love and we've got everything invested in our matches is because we're fans and because we know all the contacts. But this alien will know nothing. So he needs something that he can understand straight away. So it needs to have a bit of everything about it. It needs to have skill and drama. and it
this
needs
is
to
have us on this so far, by the way. Go on.
Okay, and he says have as few, down dull bits as possible. So I would probably choose something like. Do you remember that World Cup? It's not even a Tottenham. Does it have to be a Tottenham game?
No,
it
doesn't have to be Tottenham. No.
Okay. Do you remember that game in the 1982 World Cup between Italy and Brazil? It was.
I saw it on World Cup Rewind on BBC or ITV the other day. Oh, BBC, wasn't it? On the other day. What, the 3-2?
Yeah, the 3-2, exactly. It had everything. I haven't seen it for years. I haven't seen it recently, but it had everything because it had supreme skill. There were two incredibly technically brilliant teams with loads of great players, but it also had five goals and a really sort of undulating narrative. You didn't know who was going to win. You kind of suspected all the way through it was going to be Brazil, and then it wasn't. And I would say something like that to the uninitiated. That's a beautiful game with a bit of everything about it.
Falcao.
Yeah. Socrates.
Socrates. Rossi got the hat trick.
Zico was in the game, wasn't he?
Zico, yeah. Brilliant. I'm going to pin you down on a Spurs game as well, though. We can't have can't have a Spurs match as well.
Yeah, well, I was thinking that for the Spurs game, it would be... I was just wondering if the alien would understand it without context, but I would probably go for the semi-final in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
Because for drama... I mean, for coming back off the floor, that was the ultimate game. Well, even if you're not a Spurs fan, I mean, the drama of that game was astonishing. I don't think any of us have fully recovered from it, if I'm honest. I mean, I'm still exhausted emotionally from it now.
Well, I can't. My son is 10, and we can't stop watching it. In this lockdown, we watch. The whole second half. We watched the 10 minute highlights. We love the BT unfiltered thing when Hoddle and Rio Ferdinand jump up and down and Rio Ferdinand whacks Hoddle in the heart, for goodness sake. And then he sits down and looks at me going, "Oh, you're right." That is football. That is
what
it's all about. You know, you've got a West Ham fan.
I know.
And the greatest ever Spurs legend. You've got Gary Lineker.
You
can't believe it because he was commentating on the game the day before where Barcelona had been knocked out by Liverpool. And those 2 days of football. And there's another one, what happened 3 weeks before when we did the same with Man City.
Yeah, at Man City. I mean, that's right.
Amazing. Yeah. And then we go to the final and I was going to swear as well. I'm not allowed to. The most awful game ever, which was over after 17 seconds.
Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. Where were you? Let's just finish off, Theo, with the final. Did you go to the final?
I did. But I had a nightmare.
Flight, were you?
Yes, I was. I was on the Thomas Cook flight. Yeah, the one. So I missed the first 15 minutes. So it was all like, as you say, it's pretty much all over by the time I got in the ground. And it was a complete in sharp contrast to that. I mean, it was just an awful, the whole thing, the experience was terrible. It took us like a whole day to get there. We get there late. The game is a non-event, really. It's a damp squib of a game. We never really got going. Yeah, we lost in a boring game. And then we didn't get our flight home, which was supposed to be straight after the game. Didn't take off till 8:30 the following morning. So the whole thing was a hideous, grotesque nightmare. But as you say, football, it'll build you up and it'll knock you down again, won't it?
I know. But Rob told us the story, and I had Terry Hill. Do you know Terry Hill?
Yeah, he was on it as well, I think.
Brilliant. And he spoke about that. And for me, I got my tickets on the Wednesday afternoon. Because I spoke to my dad, who was in La Manga. Do you know the golf place down in the south of Spain? He's got a place out there, and he was going out for a week anyway, so he'd already got his flight sorted. I said, shall I get the flights now? Because they're 200 quid from Southend, Friday afternoon. Come back Sunday. I can spend the weekend with you in La Manga.
Perfect.
And it'll be perfect. And of course, after the game, the tickets went up to £2,000 on the flight. So I've done all that right. Clearly with the missus, even though she was fuming with me at half time.
Went out,
had the most fantastic weekend, and all the time I'm looking on Twitter and I'm looking at you boys. I follow you, Rob and Terry, and I'm looking and going, oh, look at these poor sods that, you know, and I won't tell you that I was having lovely San Miguel's and eating steak and chips in a fine restaurant in Madrid. I'm not going to tell you that, I promise you.
No, don't tell me, no.
But we got to a Champions League final, Theo, and I don't know about you, but I am one that says brilliant. We've never done it before. We got to a European Cup final, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. The 3.5 weeks up to that game. I mean, it was a joyous thing, and that's what I'll remember. And all this, we need to win a trophy. We need to do well. What if we don't? What if we don't win a trophy? Spurs will continue, and we'll still have great games, won't we, Theo?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah. Brilliant.
Well, listen. Thanks ever so much for being on the show. It's been joyous, and
I've loved it.
Yeah, no, it's good fun, and as I say, I think this might be the last one because I'm back to school on Monday. I've got to try and socially distance 10-year-olds. So good luck
for
me.
Yeah. I hope that goes well for you.
I'll just talk about Spurs, I suppose, for 6 hours every day. Try and bore them to death, get them sleeping. All right, Theo, fantastic. Thanks ever so much.
Thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
No problem.
Cheers, mate.
Enjoy your weekend. Cheers. Come on, you Spurs.
Bye.